Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western.
Oh, mule deer, baby. Right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
A Game Warden's children's book, titled A Cowboy in the Woods, is a story of Bobby, a boy who spends the whole summer observing wildlife, writing notes in his notebook, fishing with his dad, and keeping track of all the animals in his neighborhood. While trying to solve a neighborhood mystery, what he discovers is more than just an appreciation for the natural world. The idea for this book came from Wayne Saunders' own childhood experiences, growing up and exploring the woods and streams and lakes and ponds of his native New Hampshire. The love of nature instilled in his childhood led him to a career as a conservation officer. Wayne Saunders is a retired lieutenant conservation officer from the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Lindsay Webb is a naturalist, wildlife biologist, and environmental educator. Together, they collaborated with wildlife artist Ashley Mayers to produce The Cowboy in the Woods, the story of a boy whose love of nature leads him in unexpected directions. Available at wardenswatch.com and Amazon. Warden's Watch Podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line Podcast and the Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon.
We love our children. We protect them. We guide them. We prepare them for life in the world. With all that we do, from deep in our hearts, we cannot control all things. Life-threatening illnesses and disabilities affect far too many of our children each year. While we cannot change the circumstance, we can make dreams come true. Dreams to provide hope, to provide spiritual healing and strength, to provide moments of happiness and relief in the hardest of times. We can give a glimmer of light and hope in a time of darkness and despair. Join huntofalifetime.org to help make dreams come true, to provide hope for children with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Hunt of a Lifetime is a nonprofit organization fulfilling dreams for hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Visit huntofalifetime.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch. Brought to you in part by Maine Operation Game Thief, New Hampshire Wildlife Heritage Foundation, International Wildlife Crime Stoppers, and the North American Game Warden Museum. Warden's Watch, Episode 113, The Conclusion of Big Boy. Had the opportunity to sit down with the hunters, Ian and Brad, and talk about this case from their perspective, which I think was really interesting. And the one thing we talked about, why we weren't recording, is Brad brought up the fact that this deer was recorded in Kentucky as the Kentucky archery state record. And not only were they cheated out of this, but if that had stood, the guy that currently had the Kentucky state record would have been cheated out of his position on that chart by an illegally taken deer in another state, which wouldn't have been fair to him. And Brad pointed that out. I thought it was pretty important to point that out as we went into this warden's watch. So if you're a hunter, I'm sure you can relate to this, and I appreciate their efforts in reporting this and being part of the solution. So thank you, gentlemen. Certainly, if you have hunter friends that would like to listen to Warden's Watch, share that, especially this perspective. I think it's really important. So, and here is the conclusion of the Big Boy case. On this episode of Warden's Watch, we are sitting down for the first time hunters involved with a poaching case. And a lot of poaching cases come from really good information and really good hunters. And I'm going to say this, I try to say this, if I can say this every podcast, I will, hunters are conservationists. And I want to keep driving that home. And certainly my guests today are an example of that in so many different ways. Ian Obenchain and Brad Bailey are the two hunters that were in the pursuit of Big Boy. You guys have now heard Chris Gilkey's podcast regarding the epic deer. I like to use that word a lot, guys, so that's my word, is epic. So the epic deer named Big Boy. And you know, who named that deer, Ian, Brad? Was it you guys?
Yeah, it was.
It was us, but...
Yeah, great to be here with you, Wayne. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm Ian, and Brad's sitting next to me. Yeah, Big Boy was, you know, obviously fitting. It was, not sure which one of us knew him. I think we sat down, and I'm not sure how that exactly came about. It's been a while, but yeah, he was a big boy.
And we talked a little bit earlier, but you guys, I mean, this is how many years ago that this occurred?
This was 2009, 2010, I believe, maybe the summer of 2009.
Yeah, so quite a long time in between here. And you guys were on the, I mean, if this was happening now, if you guys were following a deer, the technology change in cameras and everything, but back then, technology was pretty clunky coming into it. Probably the beginning of the digital age, so to speak, with trail cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So there was a no cell cams that I remember. Mm-hmm. So we were out there checking cameras, and the video camera, you know, stuff wasn't what it is today. So
right,
we were just getting into the video camera, you know, the videoing hunts type of deal. And that's all changed quite a bit. It was not as advanced as it is now, for sure.
Right. You guys, were you together when you first saw this deer, or was it just one of you doing a drive-by?
No, I believe it was me, and I'm not sure how long before. It wasn't long. I'm not sure with the exact circumstances, but there's a large bean field off the side of a pretty main road in the county that I live off of. And so I believe one day, you know, driving home or driving around the evenings looking for velvet bucks and the beans, I came across this guy, and he was just something that I've, you know, like nothing I've ever seen before. And I'd known Brad through high school, a small town, knew him through school. He's got two brothers, knew his younger brother, hung out with him and quite a bit. And then me and Brad ended up going to the same college and lived close by in an apartment complex on that campus or just off campus. And I hadn't really been into hunting much up until this point. And then Brad is, he's been hunting his whole life. Knowing Brad from that and knowing his background, I believe I saw you at the fair.
It was at the county fair.
The county fair. I had gotten some footage of the buck, a big boy, and saw Brad at the county fair, said, "Hey man, you got to come out to my car and check this out." And just wanted to get his opinion, get, you know, have a possibility of filming this deer. I really wanted to get on film if we could hunt him on film, get a kill on film, but certainly wanted his input on hunting this deer. What did I need to do? You know, this is something that I'm only been doing this a couple of years. He's been doing this whole life. So that was, he had a wealth of information on how to do that and go about that and kind of, you know, the wisest way to approach this.
So the first time I saw the deer at the county fair, he's on a, I think it's a flip phone, you know, where it's poor quality. He's trying to show me through this flip phone. And my first words are, "Have you shown this to anybody?" I was like, "Please tell me you've shown this to anybody." I was like, this thing is the real deal. And from there on, it was like pretty much just code talking around everybody. You know, it was nothing I'd ever seen before. I'd seen big deer, but not world class. And this thing was world class. So it blew my mind when I saw it. I was thankful that he came to me to just try and help him, you know, get through it. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Wow. So Big Boy kind of brought you guys together as hunting partners. Did that continue after this deer?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's actually, and thinking through this whole thing and, you know, recently, you know, thinking back on it, you know, it's super unfortunate the way it unfolded in a lot of ways, but, you know, the silver lining is it did. It brought us together and, you know, now we're super close and have been and hunted together and fished together and been best of friends since. So that was really, you know, that's something that I look back on. I'm super thankful for. And Big Boy brought us together like that. Yeah.
Mm. So tell me about, you know, now that you know that deer's there, how'd you guys go about dissecting this, so to speak?
Yeah. So we, you know, for me, it was all about, you know, getting a pattern put together and trying to figure out what we could possibly figure out that he would do when the beans turned yellow, because around here, our season comes in at the end of September and normally all the beans are turning yellow or have already turned yellow. And that was where Brad came. And Brad actually did you guided in Illinois. For a college internship or something. So he had a lot of experience guiding and putting together, you know, these plans and getting big deer on the ground. You know, he just kind of walked me through what the process should be. And, you know, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I know we tried to get a lot of footage. We got trail cameras out, got pictures of him, got where he was coming from. He kind of explained to me that in the summertime, these deer can move for quite a ways to get to their, you know, summer food sources, which around here is usually soybeans. I think that's the preferred food source. And what we found out is he was moving quite a distance from where he was actually bedding to where he was feeding in this bean field. So the strategy of hunting that property or that bean field probably wasn't going to work out come season. We knew that he probably wasn't going to be there. He was going to be back, you know, on a different pattern. So trying to get that put together and, you know, figure out acorns, and we were putting corn out and mineral, and felt like we were pretty close to where he was bedding. And we were just hoping and praying that was going to maintain come season.
Right. So you kind of walked your cameras back to where you thought he was, and you tried to narrow it down and narrow it down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
So how did that season persist? I mean, here comes the beginning of archery season. And tell me about that season of searching for Big Boy.
Yeah, so we were
I can see the chagrins too, guys. I'm sorry. I can see it on your face because you know, I can see you put a lot of effort and time into this, and that's what we're building up to. So for sure. But I can see it on your faces.
Amount of time.
Yeah, the time was, I mean, the commitment. I didn't have a family at that point. I was in a relationship. Brad was starting a family, and the time commitment was just, it was outrageous. I mean, we were literally spending most of every day putting together the plan, you know, being out there scouting, getting tree stands set up and trying to hone this plan and come season. And trying to learn how to film, because we were trying to film this whole thing. So that's right. A whole different ballgame when you're trying to film and hunt together.
Tell me.
It's just, it adds such, you know, just a whole nother level of complexity to the whole thing. So we were trying to get that. We didn't want, you know, the first time we were in a tree with a camera to be when he walked out. So we were just practicing and trying to get this whole thing down. And early on in September, he disappeared. And it was first week or so in September, he disappeared. Beans were still green, so we were kind of worried about that, but it's not abnormal for deer to, you know, especially big deer like that. With he was getting more pressure, I'm sure, from people driving down the road and slowing down and taking a look, you know. So we thought, well, maybe he just got bumped, or maybe he's, you know, on a different pattern now. And it was a bummer, and we were worried about it, but it wasn't abnormal, so we didn't lose a lot of sleep over it. We just, you know, kept on with the plan. And come season, we hunted hard. tried to be smart about it, but we were excited. And, you know, I think that first morning, I don't know what time I got in the tree stand that opening morning, but I pretty much camped out in the tree and never did have an encounter. You know, saw some of the bucks that he would hang around with, or that he was close to, on a summer pattern, which was worrisome, but he was a different level. He was a different caliber. We knew that he could be just hiding in a 1 acre hole somewhere, you know, in a thicket, and just not going to show himself in the daylight. That was my thought process going through that season. We never did see him, never did get another picture of him. Mm-hmm. And that's how that, you know, season progressed.
But put a lot of time and a lot of effort, a lot of going to check stations, looking for pictures of him, someone else killing him, looking on Facebook. You guys were in pursuit of big boy that whole season. That was your focus.
That was it. And yeah, you hit it, man. Every night you go home and you pull up Facebook just fearing the worst. You know, you're just waiting for that to pop up, or for some buddies are constantly throughout the season sending you pictures. So as soon as one of my hunting buddies or somebody that I knew was in the hunting game was, I see a picture pop up, and I would just get nauseous. You know, you're just waiting, but never did happen. So we thought, hey, maybe he survived and he's going to be a world record typical next year. Yeah. So, which we thought he probably was on his way to.
Yeah. And talking about getting nauseous, I think that's the way Chris Gilkey almost describes Brad as he showed up at that. What specific show? I can't remember. It was the Ohio Whitetail, or do you remember the exact
show? Deer and Turkey Expo. So, yeah, Deer and Turkey Expo in Columbus.
Deer and Turkey Expo. So, but when Chris describes Brad showing up, you know, he thinks it's an emergency because Brad, it doesn't look like he's got any color in his face. He knows his wife's pregnant. And he's thinking, you know, I'm going to have to help this guy out some way if we're going to have to get him to a hospital to see his wife's having birth. Or, you know, he describes Brad's look like a state of emergency. And that's probably how you felt too, wasn't it, Brad?
That's pretty much. So I was up there helping a friend try and book some hunts. He was he's a booking agent, and I knew some of the properties that he had. So I was trying to help him along. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been at the show at all. I was just there to help him. Another guy that we knew, Logan McNulty, his dad owned Walker Tree Stands, and he was there helping his dad. But we had knew him through the filming thing. He was trying to help us out with camera equipment. And he walks up to me in the middle of the show on the first day, and he said, "You know that deer you showed me?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "I think it's in the booth behind you." And I'm like, "Nah. I doubt it. I haven't had time to walk around or anything yet, so I had no idea." He's like, "Dude, seriously, you need to probably come with me." I was like, "All right, let's go." And, you know, walk around the corner, and I didn't even make it to the booth, and I saw it. I didn't see that it said, you know, Kentucky state record or anything like that, but I was like, "That is not good." And on our way, I was just going to walk back, you know, to the booth I was working at, and Logan said, "Dude, it says Kentucky state record. I was like, are you kidding me? And I walked back around. At this point, I couldn't even talk. I was like, okay, I saw Gilkey earlier. So I booked it around to the front, knowing what booth he was working. And that's the point where I'm white as a sheet. I'm sure I couldn't get the words out to tell him that, you know, Big Boy was up there. He definitely thought something was wrong with me. But I finally got it out and said, you know, it's Big Boy and he's here at the show and he's in a booth up here with some guys. It's the new Kentucky state record. And Gilkey's face, I mean, his demeanor changed immediately. And because, I mean, that feeling that you know that there's foul play, I mean, it was immediate. There was no, man, you know, maybe it swam the river. Well, we're in the northern part of that county.
Right.
They don't go down there.
Yeah.
And then where he's saying he killed it, that's even farther. So it wasn't going to happen. Yeah, from there, Gilkey pretty well took care of us. We rounded up what footage and pictures. I mean, we had hundreds of pictures, 40-some minutes of video of every angle you could ever want from this deer. We at least did have good quality for the day. We had a cutty back that was state-of-the-art then as far as trail cameras go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had really good quality footage of everything about that deer. And yeah, it was a wild ride after that.
Yeah. No, what timing though to have Chris at that show as well and put that together. Cause I'm sure when you told him what the title said in Kentucky state record, I mean, he instantly in his brain said poached. Cause what I would have done. Right. And you guys did too. You were like instantly, you kind of put it together too, that this stinks to high heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Going back a little bit, Chris was a new game warden in the county, and we met, I'm not sure how we met him, but we ended up meeting up with Chris and becoming pretty good friends with him prior to finding out about Big Boy and locating him. So we were already hanging out with Chris, hunting with him even, and pretty good friends. And as soon as we got that footage, we knew, I mean, instantly we were both, you know, there was no question we needed to get a hold of Chris, not only because he's a hunting buddy of ours and we want to show him this, but he's the new county game warden and he needs to know about this because this is going to draw some attention, not only from poachers, but also if we are to, you know, to kill this thing, we wanted to cover our bases and make sure there weren't any questions. There were several cases back, you know, of giant deer being killed, what I assume legally, but there's always somebody that, you know, says something or rumors and you end up having to try to defend yourself and it can ruin a really good thing. So we wanted to get out ahead of that. So yeah, he knew about that deer prior showing. Yeah. As soon as he saw that at the expo, I think he knew, I think we all knew, it just wasn't probable. It wasn't feasible that deer was going to end up that far away.
You know, we know what happened. You know, Chris did a great podcast with me and was able to make that case, which was, that's huge. And you guys played a big role in it by, you know, the camera footage, the pictures, everything else, because, you know, now we know pretty much that with the antlers, it's almost like a fingerprint. You can almost determine perfectly where that deer is, you know, just by looking at it and have experts testify to it if necessary and things like that. But you guys supplied all that evidence to him to bring that all together to make sure. As a matter of fact, you know, the guy that poached it identified it when, you know, your picture was thrown there. That's my deer. Yep, that's my deer. I mean, that's, you can't nail anything better when a guy says, yeah, that picture, that's the deer I shot right there. And then, you know, that just brings that all together. So, but from your perspective, I mean, we go from Brad turning white, you know, with that thing, and you guys were probably on a little, Brad, you must have been on little pins and needles. You want this case to happen, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole rest of the show, I had a hard time helping my buddy at his booth. Yeah, I mean, I was calling him and my wife because I had all the camera footage at my house and all the pictures. Just didn't think that was the way that it was going to go down. I remember telling my wife, I was like, we're going to make this deer famous. Because she was kind of making fun of us about all the camera equipment and all the time spent. Mm. I was like, we're going to make him famous. Just didn't expect it to go like this and make him famous like that. I mean, the deer deserves every bit of credit. With as much antler he's got on his head, it's worth being seen. But just not like that.
Yeah. This just, you know, when I hear poachers are thieves, poachers steal from people, and that just emanates from you guys that, you know, you put this effort into it, you dialed this in, and then it was stolen. And, you know, that's a lot of time and effort, and sometimes that's more important than money for sure. And the opportunity to have a, like you said, a legal hunt and be able to harvest an animal to that quality was taken from it. And I just, it infuriates me as a game warden that happens. But, you know, let's face it, there's over 100 trophy wildlife cases nationwide in North America every year. And those are the reasons why. That's why when it used to have the deer pools, you know, that was the worst driving poaching thing you ever had. If you get a new rifle and $1,000, there was guys out shining and shooting deer to register in the pool like crazy. You know, anything to get that prize to win the other prize. So you get a great buck and you get a rifle and a couple $1,000s to boot. So, and that, you know, it's money and bragging rights that sometimes drive poaching. And for sure, and I think that the bragging rights came into this. And I mean, when you can label a deer like that, the Kentucky state record, I mean, but inside, I don't know how people operate inside. and I'm sure you guys can't relate to that either, because you were going to do it the right way and then it was stolen from you.
Yeah, it's difficult. It was a tough one, tough pill to swallow. We could have killed that deer 100 times illegally, you know, pretty easily with, mm-hmm. you know, probably a handgun. We were in the bean field with him almost every evening, pretty daggone close, maybe too close sometimes.
Too close.
But yeah, it's tough. It's unfortunate that there are people like that out there. It's the reality, but it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow.
Mm, for sure. For sure. Well, thanks for sitting down and giving me the hunter side of it. And, you know, the other thing is the reporting information. And that's how probably some of the best cases game wardens make are guys like you. They can dial things in and give us that evidence. Without that evidence, I think Chris did an outstanding job as an interviewer. But if things clam up, we have to use those fingerprints, so to speak, all the evidence gathered. And I think it's more common today than it was back then that guys are studying. They're locating big bucks, and then they're studying them, and then they're being very, very good at killing these animals. But they're also learning their habits and everything else. They're almost like biologists with a purpose. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I find it fascinating too. I mean, coming in from the other side and just learning that habitat in the Northeast too, you know, they're people are just starting to dial in these bucks and do that type of thing. And then hunt specific animals. That's very, very interesting. That's only really happened in the past, probably since you guys started. Maybe it happened in, you know, Ohio and Illinois and all that before it happened here, but it certainly has gravitated to the Northeast and other places where you see an animal and you look to harvest that animal. And it's kind of cool. It's a pursuit of something different. You're not a meat hunter. You're, you know, whether you want to call it a trophy hunter or not, but it's certainly a harvestable animal. And we think that's great. And I think it's kind of cool that you're mini biologists and everything you learn about deer habitat.
Yeah, for sure. It's a year long process nowadays, which is, you know, it's neat. It's way more than just waiting for opening day and popping your butt in a tree stand. You're literally working year round, scouting and food plots and cameras, and it's a second full time job a lot of times for a lot of guys. The amount of work that's being put into this is tremendous. So yeah, it's pretty neat. It's quite the process nowadays.
And I think it's pretty cool that the steer brought you guys together as hunting partners too. I mean, it would have been nice if you could have harvested it together, 100%. I get it, but it's kind of funny, Ian, that you saw this buck and like, I need the resources to be able to do this right, and then you go to Brad, a friend and now a very good friend and a hunting partner, and I think that's a really cool story to tell out of, it's making lemonade out of lemons, because let's face it, this is a sour, very sour case for everybody, but I think in the end, you guys made out good by Big Boy had a reason. He brought you guys together.
That's right. Yeah. And Chris too. You know, Chris did a heck of a job. I mean, it was amazing to us. The deer was a big deal to us, but to see it being such a big deal to Chris and the rest of the law enforcement side, that meant a lot. And it was encouraging that they took it as seriously as they did and really just did a phenomenal job on the case and took it, you know, way farther than we thought that it was going to get taken. And that was nice to see. That was really, we knew Chris was a good guy. He was a good buddy, but what we learned through that process is he's a heck of a investigator too. And, you know, that was pretty cool to watch play out. It was terrible, you know, in a lot of ways, but it was cool to see how it ended and see how they handled it and the professionalism and the grit, man. Those guys worked hard to get every ounce of retribution that they could. So it was cool.
Yeah, no, I would agree. He worked very hard on that case, and it's near and dear to his heart. You know, the first thing he wanted to podcast was about Big Boy and that experience, and I don't blame him. For a game warden, that's a case of a lifetime, if you ask me. But I did kind of throw that out in a challenge, though, that Chris, you know, that's a case of a lifetime. Let's see if you can do one better. So
He will. I guarantee it.
Yeah. He seems like a kind of guy that rises to challenges. That's the only reason I threw that out there.
Yep, exactly. He's tenacious, man.
That's great. And thank you for sitting down and sharing the hunter side of things, because sometimes we forget how much you guys invest in our natural resources as much as we do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, and we appreciate what you guys do.
No, thanks, guys.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigations, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders,